Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Does this green jacket make our butt look big?
When you die on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me. Which is nice.
This is a Masters Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
It's Masters Week with Dirt and Spray on your home for golf's finest traditions. 1080.
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two, home of the Oregon Ducks here on Odyssey and Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan. Dirt Duck football is underway.
It is. Spring football is happening right now.
And I think it's time to check in and see how things are going. The offensive play caller for your Oregon Ducks, Joe Moorhead, joins us now as spring football is underway down in Eugene. The Ducks coming off of a Pac-12 championship. Coach, good morning. How we doing?
Morning, guys. Doing great. How about yourselves?
I'm doing fantastic. We haven't talked to a coach since the COVID season ended, so I want to pick your brain. Hell of a debut down in Eugene for you with that whole season going underway the way it did. What was that like from just an evaluation standpoint where you had opt-outs in college football, your schedule's a little clunky, you get into the Pac-12 title game the way you did? Like, what was that season like from a coaching angle?
I mean, it was incredibly unique. I mean, the best way I can describe it is surreal. I mean, you really didn't know what was going to happen, you know, on a day-to-day basis. I mean, at the tail end there, we actually game planned three opponents in a span of 10 days. So it was just, you're always on your toes waiting to see what was going to happen.
That's nuts. I remember interviewing you last year at the signing day special, and little did we know a couple of weeks later, everything would just come to a halt. How nice has it been so far this year to actually have spring practice that has not been shut down because you're still trying to probably instill some of your offense? You got some new pieces. How nice has that been for you?
Oh, it's been wonderful. And, you know, last year, you know, four spring ball practices before we shut down, and then the whole start and stop with the season, not a season, and a kind of a truncated fall camp. And it just, there wasn't much, I know it's a very cliche word, wasn't much normalcy to it. But now right. That, you know, we're in the second year of the system, got a bunch of people returning, we're going to have a full complement of 15 practices. It just feels like things are getting as much back to, normal as they can be.
Yeah. How's Ty Thompson, Coach? I think there's a lot of Duck fans that are anxious to see, you know, what this kid is. And obviously he's the big name coming into spring football. I know that's not necessarily always the storylines for guys like you, but what's it been like so far with Ty Thompson?
No, very exciting. And he's living up to his billing. I hadn't seen him throw football in person until the first day of spring practice, you know, cause we weren't allowed to go on the road and evaluate, and everything was done off of film. But you know, Ty's an incredible young man, very intelligent, is very much into the mental aspect of the game and is very advanced for a young guy mentally. And then all of his physical tools match up. So through four practices so far, he's doing a real nice job, and we just need to see him continue to develop.
Impressive enough, Coach, for us to say Ty Thompson starter at Ohio State? Or
you can say that. I'm not going
to. I mean, on that note,
Coach. I'm not in that chair anymore, so I can pass that on to you guys.
I love it, man. On that note, I mean, how is the quarterback battle going? It's got to be unique this year. Shuck, and obviously transferring the program, the guy who was your opening day starter last year. But Anthony Brown back. I know I've heard some comments from Mario about, you know, Robbie and the way that he's looked, Ty into the mix. Just how's that shaking out so far?
It's been fun to coach this group, you know, and you know, AB's the elder statesman of the group. He's played a lot of football at this level at a very, you know, productive level at Boston College. You know, he got, you know, over 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns on his resume and did a real nice job there, you know, in his opportunities in the, in the Pac-12 championship game and in the bowl game. And then after that, we got a group of talented guys who just lack experience, and we have to get them as many reps as possible in spring, continue to teach them the offense and have them, you know, translate that information from the meeting room to the field.
You know, in our business, and you know this as well as anybody, our business and just fans in general, those are the conversations people love to have, right? Is the speculation, who's going to be the guy? How do coaches view quarterback competitions like one where you have a super experienced, good athlete like Brown, and then you bring in a high recruit in a Ty Thompson? You've got people talking about Robbie Ashford. How do coaches view quarterback competitions versus like us in the media or fans?
No, I mean, it's great water cooler talk. I mean, I think that's what makes the game great, you know what I mean? But, you know, this will be year 23, and every season you go into has a different, you know, the fabric of the quarterback competition is woven a little bit differently. And, you know, this is one where, you know, they said AB's coming in with the most experience. You've got a bunch of talented guys. And really the competition is making everybody better, you know, whether it's, you know, AB competing against himself or those kind of three guys in the middle, you know, fighting and, you know, working to kind of establish a pecking order there. But, you know, they're all unique, and I can't remember kind of one that specifically matches this criteria, but, you know, I'm sure there's been one along the way.
Yeah, I think the exciting thing for you, too, as an offensive coordinator has to be what those quarterbacks, whoever it ends up being, has to work with on the outside at the skill position, some of your running backs back and Verdell and Dye. I know the injury for Sean Dollar is probably unfortunate, but you got a lot of talent on the outside as well. Just how is that group coming together, your skill position players, and how are they gelling now going into year two in that offense?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the quarterback position where we've got a group of established returning veterans and even up front that have played a lot of good football and won a lot of games, and complement that with younger guys, whether they're you know, mid-year enrollees or maybe some younger guys who haven't had, you know, significant established roles, and those guys are pushing each other and they're working. So it's always fun to have guys that have done it and have them, you know, playing good football, and then a lot of young guys, you know, pushing those guys as well.
Yeah, Duck spring football is underway. We're talking with the offensive play caller for the team. Joe Moorhead is our guest here, home of the Ducks here on 1080 The Fan. You know, I asked you at the start of the interview just the season in general from a coaching angle and how different it was for you. What do you, just individually, when you're breaking the film down, watching your guys execute the plays you're calling last season, what does Joe Moorhead think of year one in Eugene for himself and the way his team executed offensively? And what's something or some things you may be looking to change?
No, I mean, you're never going to be – the second that you're satisfied as a coach without a team performance, you know, unit performance or individual performance, you should probably go do something else. So, I mean, you know, we had five new starters up front, a new quarterback, you know, a brand new offensive system in a season where you didn't have spring ball and weren't sure you were going to play and didn't know who was going to be available on a day-to-day basis. So for us to be, you know, in the top three of the conference and you know, most, you know, offensive categories and helping the team, you know, to a, you know, a Pac-12 championship and in a New Year's Day bowl, I'd say all those things are positive. And if you look at the places I've been, there's been a pretty big jump from year one to year two. So now I think with all the returning players, combined with the second year in the system, combined with having full spring ball and a normal schedule, I'm hoping to see, and I'm confident that we'll, you know, take that step from being, you know, a top three, you know, offense in most things to hopefully towards the top.
Yeah, and interviewing coaches over the years, I know they all have different opinions of spring ball. But on that note, you know, going from year one to year two, are there any, you know, kind of benchmarks or goals that you give yourself and you give your offense of what you want to see it look like from day one to the final day when you wrap things up with the spring game?
No, we always talk about it, creating explosive plays and minimizing turnovers. And the turnovers part is something we really got to improve on from last year. I mean, we did really nicely with the explosive play part, you know, continuing to convert third downs, scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And then really, you know, just, you know, the next steps that we're taking and the things that we're able to implement and install, you know, kind of taking the training wheels off that, you know, and just building on the, you know, the foundation of the offense. Those are the things I'd like to see coming out of spring ball.
You know, Coach, I don't follow spring ball as closely as maybe everybody else out there. I'll tune into a spring game. I love to talk to guys like yourselves to get an update. And I trust people like you, Coach. You're going to have to fill me in here. You're getting quite a few weapons back. I mean, you get Johnny Johnson to opt back in, Micah Pittman being able to come back for a full season, Devin Williams in your arsenal. I mean, those are really nice weapons to have offensively. What have you made of what those guys have been doing so far, and has there been any noticeable jump from any of them?
I think they've all been making, you know, good, steady strides. And you know, we talk about the skill guys and everyone wants to talk about the quarterback, but I've been, you know, excited about what's happening up front, you know, with all those guys coming back, you know, and Coach Criswell talks all the time about the culture and the physicality and us winning the line of scrimmage. So to me, it all starts there, and I'm excited to see what they're doing. And then when that's taken care of, you're able to do some of the things and be balanced in the run game and the pass game. But, you know, it's tough to, you know, guys are having different moments and different practices, you know, whether it's, you know, Johnny or, like I said, and whoever it may be on a particular day. But, yeah, when you have that many guys that are capable of making plays, it makes it comfortable as a play caller to know that you're, you know, able to be balanced and diverse in your attack.
Have you had, or what was your first experience as the play caller where you notice something off on the offensive line and right before you say something, Mario kind of pushes you and just goes into him and tries to teach him up? How many experiences have you had where Mario kind of steps into the offensive line group to kind of get them in the right direction?
Well, no, he and Coach Mirabeau have that taken care of. I stay out of the way. I know what the schemes are and how to draw up the X's nose when they get started to talking technique and all that O-line stuff. I'm just an old quarterback. I get out of the way. I head over to the skill guys.
That's a smart man right there. Now, I got to ask, because I can't get his high school highlights out of my head. Is there any chance that you can go convince, you know, whether it be Tim DeRuiter, whether it be Mario, to get Noah Sewell some carries this year?
Yeah, that's been talked about, but I think right now with Coach DeRuiter and those guys installing the defense, that might be a hard sell in spring ball. Maybe that's something we can approach in fall camp.
Well, from the offensive play side, Coach, I don't know what the experience would be all time for your career, but DeRuiter is new to the program this year, and a lot of people are excited about that. Just from the offensive standpoint, when you're facing a Tim DeRuiter defense, you know, what is something that sticks out to you from your angle of everything?
Very fundamentally sound. You know, the kids are utilizing great technique. And, you know, it's just the guys are flying to the football, you know, very assignment sound. And then just it's tough to kind of get a gauge on, I don't say what they're doing, but they do enough disguise and then doing enough things where, it, you know, it makes you, as a play caller and a quarterback, you know, kind of going against the defense, making sure that you're going through your pre-snap checklist and your post-snap confirmation. You know, all the things are necessary for you to be successful. But the Coach Drew is fantastic. Great guy, great staff, chemistry, you know, all that stuff. He's a pro's pro.
Well, and you guys are pretty unique on that staff to have both coordinators be former head coaches at big-time programs. How much do you think that helps? I know we're all in our own respective industries trying to grow and get better and learn new things and evolve. Just how much does that help, you think, Mario and the program to have you and the D.C. both be former head coaches?
I think, I mean, when you've sat in that seat, it's unique. And, you know, I know Mississippi State and I don't think at Fordham, but had some ex-head coaches on my staff. And, you know, when there's a situation that arises that maybe you haven't, you know, encountered or something where you're looking for insight, it's always good to be able to go to someone who's done it before and kind of gone through those experiences and just kind of bend their ear a little bit and get advice. So, but Mario's fantastic with that.
How's the Pittsburgh guy liking Eugene so far? How's the family fitting in? Are you doing any fly fishing? Have you changed your life in any way? Are you drinking more IPAs? What's life like for Joe Moorhead since he got to Eugene?
Yeah, they don't have Iron City beer in Eugene, so that's an issue. But no, we've been to Crater Lake. We've done all the outside things that you can do and hikes and stuff like that. My daughter's a sophomore here. My oldest son's playing for state championship Marist versus Mazama this Saturday, so that's awesome. And then I got a youngest one in seventh grade, so they're enjoying it. They love Eugene, and you know, we're having a good time here.
And Crater Lake, overrated or underrated?
Underrated. Was not expecting it by any means.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, hey, the next time we have you on, maybe we can talk more about beer, but thank you for hopping on with us to talk football. I know spring football just rapidly approached the season. The way it all kind of went for you guys was a whirlwind, but we're looking forward to it because Oregon's got a pretty good kickoff to their schedule in Ohio State, and we'll have to catch up with you soon here. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Have a great day.
All right, there we go. Joe Moorhead, head offensive play caller for your Oregon Ducks.
Yeah.
Feeling really encouraged of all the things he could have said. Wide receiver, the running back depth. I know Dollars got hurt. The quarterback battle. Offensive line. He's been most impressed with the offensive line, which I think is pretty big, considering they had to play last year without Penei Sewell, but now is like your real test of having a full season this year. Right. Penei is gone. He's going to get drafted. encouraging thing to hear that you're going to have good blocking up front.
Pretty tough task for a new offense coordinator to have no spring ball, truncated fall camp. You got a new starting quarterback and five new offensive linemen. You're trying to instill your offense. It wasn't an easy place for him to start. They at times looked really good offensively. At times they were stagnant. Now you're going into year two. As you mentioned, the offensive line that he pointed out, Anthony Brown looks like to be the leader in the clubhouse to win the quarterback battle. But whoever does end up winning it, I think you feel better about the way you're playing up front and the skill position players you have on the outside.
Yeah, good stuff there from Joe Moorhead, offensive coordinator for the Oregon Ducks. We'll talk with the offensive play caller, Brian Lindgren, coming up at 8 a.m. as well. But it is 7:14. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you guys stick around, coming up here at the bottom of the hour, we are going to set the Guinness World Record as a radio show. Shortest guest to appear on a sports radio program in the country.
Could be shortest host and shortest guest combo in radio history as well.
We've got Swigard ready to document said evidence to send it into the Guinness World Record individuals.
He's got one of those old foot-long rulers from school ready to go. Just, you know, stack it up, see how tall he is.
I brought my daughter's booster seat in. It's going to be some good golf talk with our good friend, Errol Bluestein, who we love. We love the guy. And by the way, he gives it as much as we do it on the air.
He's worse than we are. It's not even close.
He's lucky we don't cancel him. Yes. He really is. At this point in time, he's lucky we don't cancel him. But we'll dive into the Masters coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll get back into football at 8 a.m. We'll Sprague the Lion at 8:30.
Busy show.
It is a very busy show. I do want to ask you a football-related question.
Okay.
Being as you are the alum of one Oregon University.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Or University of Oregon.
Yeah, come on, get it right.
U of O, sorry.
Get it right.
Not OU, U of O. I like what he said, and I'm not surprised. You know, I jokingly say Ty Thompson going to be the starter at Ohio State. He says, you said that, not me. Look, I'm not going to be a fool. If they start Anthony Brown, not shocked. I do think we're going to get him rather quickly. And I think that is such an exciting thing for the Duck fans out there. It's not just one position that they care about, but it's the sexiest position. It's the position that if you have the guy, it means the most. And I really do think in that game, we're going to get him.
I hope so. It'd be fun, and I think it would mean that he played well enough in spring ball and in fall camp to garner that kind of playing time. And this is why, you know, you and I disagree a little bit on spring football and how much you want to watch. And not every spring game is exciting to me. But just for an example, like getting a chance to watch him for the first time this year, I cannot wait. And I will watch that entire spring game just to see how he looks.
Let me ask you quick. What were your impressions or thoughts of Tyler Shuck when you saw him in the spring game?
I thought he was incredibly impressive.
Yes.
I did. I thought he looked great. He stole the show.
And that's the only downfall I would push back with the spring.
You're not wrong on that. I remember talking to somebody down there after that spring game and saying, I remember I was there. Dusty and I were there, and he was the guy that stood out. Herbert was still there. It was the first spring game that Shuck had played in because obviously he didn't have a spring game last year. And he was the guy that stood out the most. And I remember just being wowed by his athletic ability, the way he looked in the pocket. Everything's jumped off the page. And then I remember having a conversation with somebody that said, yeah, but when you get him in practice and the live bullets are flying, it's not great. And that ended up being foreshadowing of the way he would play in games, which is funny. And that's where, at least so far, the stuff you're hearing about Ty Thompson is that he has looked the part in practice. Now, does a spring game performance mean that he's going to win the job? Absolutely not. You can't touch quarterbacks in spring games, so it's not necessarily real football. But just to see his arm strength, his ability to move, his ability to sense pressure, his accuracy, his ability to read defenses. Tim DeRuiter can design really complicated defenses. So there are things in that regard to look for, and I can't wait to see how he plays. But the good thing, at least for Oregon, is either way, I feel like you're in good hands. Anthony Brown came in, and similar to Joe Moorhead last year, didn't have spring ball to learn the offense. Everything got shut down after four practices. He didn't have a fall camp. He was the backup for basically every game until he finally got in one. And they're, you know, the Pac-12 championship game, they finally started to use him, and then he played in the bowl game. So this is a guy that has played a ton of football. He's had success at Boston College. He's had success at Oregon. And I think if he ends up winning the job, you feel good about the hands that the offense is in.
Well, and this isn't necessarily fair to Joe. And that's why we talked about last year with him and going into year two as the play caller. You know, that season was so stupid. And, yeah, and look, you guys won the conference, and you should be proud of that because, you know, you got into the game, and when you did, you took advantage of it. But everybody, I think, pretty much agrees that season sucked.
Yes.
I don't know what your takeaway is, but what did you take away from year one with Moorhead? Because the statistics would tell you they were kind of just, they were good. They weren't great. They were fourth, seventh. Fourth in a lot of the statistical categories of rushing, passing, total offense. But what did you make? I mean, Duck fan wanted to change for years from Arroyo. You got the change in Moorhead. And again, the season sucks. So I don't know. What was your big takeaway from having him as the new OC?
He's a far better play caller and designer of an offense than Marcus Arroyo. That is the first takeaway. And I know at times it didn't necessarily show it, but look at what Arroyo had to work with one of the best offensive lines in the country and a quarterback who we just saw what he did in the NFL, and what Joe Moorhead had to work with five new starters, didn't have Penei Sewell and Tyler Shuck, who I think had a very subpar season, to say the least.
I don't disagree with you, but I can't help but also remember the outcome. The outcome was you guys won the Rose Bowl. You won the conference. Like, do Duck fans think that if you had a Moorhead versus Arroyo with Herbert, you would have been to a playoff? Is that the difference?
That's hard. Yeah, that's hard to do.
Because the defense, like, take the Herbert year, and it happens sometimes, but if Thomas Graham doesn't fall for a double move against Arizona State.
Sure, maybe you find a way to win that game.
You win that game. I still maintain you're in the playoff. You won the conference. You were a one-loss program. You were right there in the standings. You clobbered Utah, which was a top 10 win in the Pac-12 title game. I think you guys would have gotten your ass kicked against LSU instead of Oklahoma. So I guess I'm just wondering, I don't refute that the offense looks better with Moorhead, but it's also interesting because it wasn't like,
I think that was a
test. It cost you much. You know?
Well, sure. I think at times it did. And outside of that 1 year, I mean, Arroyo was the offense coordinator the first year as well. To me, it was about not being as explosive as you possibly could be. Does that mean that you go to the playoff? I don't know the answer to that. You were carried by a ton of talent and a lot of guys that are playing in the NFL right now. And your defense was really the focal point and strength of that team. It wasn't necessarily your offense. There was always a frustration where it felt like there were training wheels on the entire season. And when you see the way Herbert played in the NFL, it's hard to refute that. Maybe it was just him growing in maturity. Maybe it was him just getting away from home. I don't know. But you go from being a guy who was he was a really good college quarterback to then being one of the best rookies in the NFL we've ever seen. Like, I didn't recognize him last year.
I don't think anybody did.
I don't know where that came from. He used to lock onto one receiver. He would at times force stuff. He would make dumb mistakes. And he had a couple of those, sure, from time to time with the Chargers, but he just looked like a different animal in the NFL. And it's hard for me to not look at that and say, well, you're kind of holding him back a little bit there. And I think for Moorhead, some of it was just trying to toot his own horn. There's no doubt. But his offenses in his career have, from year one to year two, taken a jump. And I think, just considering they're going to have a full spring and a full fall, it will take a jump, but also considering he is now in year two of instilling the offense and a bunch of guys back to play last year, I do expect much bigger things from them this season.
Well, I mean, a glimpse into Justin Herbert. I remember watching how many games where he'd throw into triple coverage, a dart perfectly to the back of the end zone for a touchdown while he's running to his left.
Right.
And I watched that same player in Auburn like a year prior throw a Hail Mary attempt to win the game out of bounds by 20 yards.
It's hard.
I can't believe that kind of player had such a swing. And maybe that is a lot of Arroyo. There's no doubt that he was a different and better player. So you can't help but go to the natural inclination of that coaching. I'm going to be interested to see what he does more head in year two because of the statistical jump that his offenses will make in his years past. There's no shortage of weapons. And if that offensive line plays as well as he's hyping it up right now, knowing you have Cristobal ball there as kind of the facilitator of the whole group, it's yet another year where even if it's Ty Thompson or Anthony Brown, I think Duck fans should feel pretty confident of their chances to repeat as Pac-12 champions today. Yeah. I don't know what team. I hope my Beavs can be in the running, but I realistically couldn't bet on that. So what team would you say is in the way right now? Washington, you don't know or trust. Mm-hmm. Washington State, yeah, prove it. Oregon State, yeah, prove it. Utah, prove it. You've gotten to the title game, you can't win it. Arizona State has a huge fat prove it on them, and USC.
Yeah, but UCLA is in that same category as well. They're returning a ton of talent this year, but you got to prove that you can do it from start to finish.
You guys are the favorites.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to go in. They won the conference back-to-back years last year. It's a bit of an asterisk.
And you should be better at quarterback.
And they should. And I think that you use the word confidence. That, to me, is the key for Moorhead in year two. He has to have confidence in his quarterback. He didn't last year, and I think at times it forced him to be conservative, and it cost them games because he just didn't trust Tyler Shuck. He's got to trust whoever is under center.
Are you going down to the spring? Well, maybe you can't.
I don't know how that stuff works.
When is that spring game?
I don't know the answer to that.
Supposed to be Saturday, May 1st. We're still finding out about details.
Oh, okay. Oh. I probably won't go, no. But I'll watch it on TV. It'll be on
the
Pac-12
Network. Well, Eric here on the
fan. Yeah.
Swigart's flirting with Harold Bluestein right now.
I don't know the answer.
Can you guys stop talking about golf porn
over there? Harold, put your shirt on.
Harold's lucky I don't document what he's doing right now on social media.
I'm reporting this to HR.
Swag, do you know they're going to, I'm assuming they air the spring game on radio, right? We're going to have the spring game here on the fan?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Can we do the spring game on the app, or is the play-by-play for everything not available on the app?
Those details best to be taken up with our boss.
No answers. This guy has no answers for me. I'm sorry.
All right, Harold.
We'll break up the football talk. We'll dive into some golf. The Masters is underway. You've got Justin Rose at 7 under as he is battling away as Augusta round two. I'm watching Phil and Tommy Fleetwood. What to make of the first day, what to make going into the weekend today. We'll talk all things golf with our golf insider and shortest radio guest host of all time. Harold Bluestein will join us for the Daily Ticker next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
But Mortgage presents the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about. And some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
Button up your mortgage with the Button Mortgage Team. Call 833-BUTTON-2 or visit buttonmortgageteam.com. The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, no more cussing. Welcome back in Daily Ticker time. Everybody, watch what you're saying. We are live on the air.
So, you need to control his microphone. Yeah. He's been doing this for like 9 years, and I still don't think he is aware if his mic's on or off.
Well, there's a button here. Swag won't let me touch any button.
Yeah, but I was listening Saturday. I got my vaccine shot. I'm listening last Saturday, and coming back from a break, I hear, you can't do that. And then Swag's like, okay, welcome back in to the golf show. And I'm like, he doesn't even know his microphone is on.
Come on, everybody.
I'm dealing with an engineer who we're not sure he's going to show up or not. That's Will Darkins. We love him.
Will's your engineer?
Yeah, he's the guy that runs that show, huh?
Yes, he does. Yeah. And so my mic sometimes is on, sometimes is off. I don't see how. So I'm pushing it, he's pushing it, and sometimes we come and go as we please. It's Saturday.
It is Saturday
Who's
morning.
Who's awake on Saturday?
From time to time, I'll be awake and I'll tune in, and then you'll tell me to pick Patrick Cantlay in my Masters pool. Come on, Harold, what are we doing here?
I said Patrick Reed. I don't think
you said Cantlay. You guys started naming names.
Can we play that back?
Can we check the tape on that one?
What, 77? That's a problem?
Is that an issue? I think it's an issue.
We call that the strip. Yeah, no. Remember 77 Sunset Strip? We call it the strip. Oh,
man. We got Harold Bluestein in here. He carries the golf show every Saturday with our esteemed producer. You can hear him right here tomorrow talking Masters. Have you ever seen the greens like this before at Augusta?
Certainly not in November. They were pretty sharp, and that's why the scores were so...
Yeah, record-setting.
Yes, exactly. There were 53 players who... broke par last in November, and there were 12 yesterday. So that's things are pretty crispy out there, as they would say, and it has nothing to do with donuts. And I thought there was going to be donuts here this morning.
That was really...
That's why I'm
here. Dude, that was a grandpa joke. I can't believe you just tried to do the crispy donut joke. Really?
You know, I pull these things out of somewhere. So the green. I think what has happened is that the Masters people are tired of scores being low.
Yeah.
And so they've gone the same route as the U.S. Open. Let's make this as miserable as possible. And then you've got hard, firm greens, no rain for the last week or so, and there's a breeze. And so whatever moisture they did have is evaporating, and the greens are really difficult.
Is it good to have this, though? Because I'm looking at the leaderboard. If you follow golf, you recognize some of these names. If you're a casual golf fan who loves the major tournaments, you don't recognize half these names. And maybe today we'll get a lot of movement on the leaderboard. Rose is sitting here trying to save his 7-under par putt. He did miss that. But is this good for the sport to do this, to have a vendetta against November rounds and say, let's screw everybody so nobody can shoot low?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair. And I think it's a little bit like a circus out there. And players, they're not saying anything because it's the Masters. And so they feel as if
it's too classy
it's
to say something.
Ground.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think it's difficult. I think they'll be adding more water to this golf course. They don't want it to dry out any more than it is. Because if you're watching on TV, there's a lot of brown spots out there. And brown means death.
Yeah.
You don't want brown.
You don't want it
to be
brown.
By the way, don't watch on TV because golf is a stupid sport who doesn't believe in airing their major championships on natural television. You have to go to weird websites to stream it.
Really? I watched it on TV yesterday.
Yeah, you probably put your phone on a Chromecast situation because you didn't.
I have one of those dishes up.
Can you turn on TV right now and see Justin Rose playing?
Yeah.
No, you can't.
It's on.
Get out of here.
ESPN Plus.
Oh,
minus?
ESPN Plus. What channel is that?
It took me an hour to find it.
This is my point.
Give me that remote. I said to my wife,
I gotta find this. It's somewhere.
She's the expert. Find ESPN Plus. What? Plus?
You're the guy that has a voice remote, and you click the button, you go, ESPN Plus channel.
And then Alexa comes on.
Yeah,
and says,
you're all confused.
I don't understand that
I don't compute
question.
This, Harold. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. We got Harold Bluestein in here. We're talking about the Masters. Justin Rose, how impressive was it watching him do what, considering how high, what was the average yesterday, 74, somewhere in that range?
It was a little over 74.
For him to go out there at 2 over going into 8. And then finish the day at 7-under. That was one of the most impressive stretches of golf I've seen in a long time.
You know, we talk about getting in the zone, and I think that he was definitely in the zone. Every shot he hit looked good.
It was perfect.
And he didn't get upset starting out. You know, some players start out, like Victor Hovland starts out with a triple bogey, and he kind of limped his way through. Good for him. But Rose, 2 over after 4 holes, didn't get too upset, understood how difficult the course was going to be, and decided to just play golf and let it go. And unbelievable, what was he, 9 under for
9 under in the last 10 or 11 holes, something like that,
And some of the shots he hit were really quite good. I mean, he hit a bunker shot, I think it was on 15. He was in the right bunker, he came out. Yeah. And he got up and down for birdie. I mean, that was a really hard shot. And then a 12 or 15 footer to make birdie.
Right.
He played very well. It was inspiring.
I have a bit of a beef to bring up with you as a guy who listens to the golf show, because I just naturally wake up now at 6 a.m. every day of the week. It doesn't matter.
Well, you're probably kicked out of bed at 4.
Well, yeah, it's not. Get out of here. You're not supposed to be here anymore. So I'm listening last week, and I've listened the last couple weeks. You, for some reason, you're like my co-host. You hate Bryson DeChambeau. I don't know what it stems from, but you really hate this guy. And yesterday, I found myself in an interesting situation. I love him. I think he's great for the sport. I love that he pisses people off for dumb reasons.
Yeah.
However,
I also love watching him suck. There is something to the, he's so cocky and arrogant.
It's not a par 68, Bryson.
Right, that when he struggles, I'm also like enjoying watching him. I can hate, I love watching him suck and I love watching him thrive. Why do you hate Bryson DeChambeau?
Well, he said some things politically that really didn't sit well with me. So we'll set that aside. Yeah. Because this is a sports show.
Yes.
Yeah, come on, stick to sports, Harold.
But the arrogance, I think bothers me, and his arrogance toward fellow players. He said some things about Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy about distance. Well, these guys will never be able to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
That went too far. He's the only player that if the moment he steps up over a putt, I'm yelling at the TV, Noonan, Noonan. But to your point, yeah. Is he good for the game? I think he has.
He's great.
He's brought some notoriety or some attention to the fact that everybody wants to hit the ball further. Here's a guy that's hitting the ball further. He just doesn't know where it's going.
Yeah.
And unless he hits fairways and makes putts, you know, he's lost. I mean, U.S. Open was a good example. He had everything clicking, and he won it in a landslide. But if you watched yesterday, it was a struggle. He made his first birdie on 15.
15, yeah, the par five.
Yeah, so, and he's trying to hit over trees, and, you know.
Right.
It's crazy. It's fun to watch, but when he does hit a tree, I agree. I love it.
It was like a train wreck yesterday. You couldn't look away.
Exactly.
And it was the same way in November. He's never had a top 20 finish at Augusta. He just cannot.
That course owns
him. He can't
him.
Putt. Yeah. He can't chip there. And then, as you mentioned, when he's hitting wayward drives, he's got no chance.
Yeah, and the greens are so tough. And if you're a marginal putter, those greens can really do a number on you.
Who's the name? Give us one name. I think JT's going to have a great day today. I like Patty Reed to move up. Who's the name?
Tiger Woods.
Okay.
I like that.
Oh, everybody. You
he's
know,
got a bunch of jackets. He's got the history.
He's not there, but they're still talking about
him. I think his ghost could beat everybody. Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
Give you a name. I like Patrick Reed.
Yeah.
And I definitely told you Patrick Reed and not Patrick
How many times did he cheat today?
I'm
once or
by
twice?
I lie for as long as I can run.
You guys
with
named
it.
Like eight names.
Yeah. I also like John Rahm a lot.
Yeah. The new daddy.
He was. And he was my choice 2 weeks ago. When
it wasn't
we
last week, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. I said
that was Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed was his choice.
I think
choice.
I said it during a break.
Oh, yeah.
I run him down the hall to the restroom, and I said, man. John Rahm. I think he's really a good player. He's a guy that gets hot and angry, and it doesn't bother me in the least.
I love it. I think it's great.
I enjoy it. So we talk about personalities in golf. Patrick Reed is great. You know, talk about a guy who is
polarizing for sure.
Thank you. And we could be married. You finished my sentences for me.
You guys are the same height.
Yeah.
Hey, easy.
Wait a minute. He's got me by at least.
I got 3 inches on him, at least.
I think it's closer to two.
You think it's?
But,
well, we know the relationship dynamic.
I think Patrick Reed, John Rahm. Good names.
Yeah.
There's players like Will Zalatoris.
Yeah.
Played really good yesterday, but it's his first time there, and first timers don't win except if you're Fuzzy Zeller.
Yeah.
1979.
All right, your co-host is going to kill me if you keep talking.
Yeah, you're
way off. He's shooting me the death stare. I
asked for one name. You're giving me nine.
No, we got to go here. Yeah.
I never get a chance to talk on Saturday.
Hey, so, tomorrow morning, 8 to 9 a.m., the golf show.
I can't get a word in edgewise. You guys at least ask questions. They're reasonable questions. I can answer them.
You can hear Harold.
I also love listening because he'll be over the clock himself. I'm like, who's yelling at Swag about the clock?
You guys shut up. We got to go to break. Daily Ticker is brought to you by Button Mortgage. Button up your mortgage with the Button Mortgage team. Call 833-BUTTON-2 or visit buttonmortgageteam.com. Look at Harold. He's got his own sponsored segment. Hear him tomorrow morning, 8 to 9 a.m. Thanks, Harold. We love you. Back after this on The Fan. All right. Thanks again to Harold. He's a national treasure, as one of our listeners said.
One of the good guys. He really is one of the good guys.
Ton of fun to talk to. And you can hear him right here on The Fan tomorrow, 8 to 9, as you can every single Saturday. with our esteemed producer doing the golf show. Brian Lindgren's going to join us coming up top of the hour, the offense coordinator at Oregon State. We talked to Joe Moorhead earlier today. How about Brian Lindgren? We'll do that.
Fair and balanced.
Look at us, man. You play both sides. That's how you got to do it. Let's sneak in, though, a quick Masters chat because we just talked about the greens in the opening segment. This, I mean, it is nuts. If you've been watching, I've never seen it like this at Augusta. They have baked out the greens, and it's playing like Shinnecock a couple of years ago. It is a U.S. Open-style course right now.
Oh, they're brown.
And look, here's the one thing is at least if you start at this point, you can turn the moisture up by the way you water, and I think there's supposed to be showers throughout the course of the weekend, so they can make it a little softer. But if you start soft, you can't go the other direction, so maybe that's the way they're going to go as the weekend goes on. Justin Rose is one over through his round so far through four holes, so he had a four-shot lead. That is down to a three-shot lead. He's at six under. But, you know, one guy I think that deserves at least a mention is the guy that you brought up in the last segment, because he came in with all sorts of attention, as he did last year when he said playing the way he's playing, Augusta is a par 68, not a par 72. Based on those metrics, I think he was 14 over par. He was four over yesterday. He only had one birdie in his round. He couldn't putt. He couldn't find a fairway. He was in the trees early and often, and it was a disastrous round for Bryson yesterday, and his woes continue. Everybody had eyeballs on him. He got a ton of TV coverage, and he played awful.
He wasn't good, but I'll tell you what. I watched a lot of what he was doing, and it's a very weird thing that I don't know if I've had this with another athlete, where I like the athlete for all the reasons people hate him. I also think he plays the game so differently and takes such a different approach. The Hulk-like nature in which he has added weight to his body. And yet when he sucks, I also am enjoying watching him. You know, it's weird. I'll root when he's winning, and I also love watching him not play well, because I know everybody that hates him is enjoying seeing it too.
Yeah, it's good for the game either way.
Like he's what, three over?
He's four over. I think the projected cut line as of right now is three over.
And
so
guess who
teed off?
I'll be following is him.
Yeah.
Because I want to see the show. I want to see if he's going to get to even or at least make the cut to go into the weekend. I think it's obvious they're going to slow things down a little bit, probably tonight once the round gets out, the water living hell out of it. It's supposed to rain this weekend at some point, and you'll start to get some better scores. I hate being this guy, because I know diehard golf guy probably disagrees. I just think you need a better leaderboard. You need some of these names. And I do think JT's going to have a good day. He was over one, and he couldn't putt well. I think that's a good sign.
Now, Spieth was one under yesterday, and that was with a triple bogey on nine when he whacked a tree.
Patty Reed's at two under. Yeah. So I think you get a couple of those names up that leaderboard. It's going to resonate better than Leishman and Weisberger.
No, I don't disagree with you there. Some of the top players in the world, DJ had a rough round. He double bogeyed 18. Rory McIlroy's all over the map. That's a segment for another time. Some of the guys that are considered the better players in the world really struggled yesterday. We'll see if they can play better today. The projected cut as of right now is at plus three. The action is going on, and Justin Rose continues to be your leader, although he's plus one through four. Last note on the Masters, and then we'll go. Abraham Anser was assessed a two-stroke penalty yesterday. If you've seen the video, it went viral. He tweeted it out where he accidentally touched the sand with his club. I think it was on the 15th hole, and you could just ever so slightly graze the sand, and he was one over par on the round. That added a two-stroke penalty, so he's now at plus three. So he's under the cut line, at least as of now. But that's a rough one, and that's one of those dumb golfers I would love to see go. It helped him and benefited him in no way whatsoever, but he was assessed a two-stroke penalty for touching the sand. Coming up in the final hour, we'll get back into the Blazers and their loss last night. What's ahead for them? We had some good thoughts on Twitter last night, so I want to read some of those. We will spring the line at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors in.
8:30.
At 8:30, thank
you. Are
you
ever going to get used to the news?
No, probably not. Yeah, it'll take me a while. At 8:30, so get your fake sponsors in. But we'll start with Brian Lindgren, the offense coordinator at Oregon State. What's he thinking about spring ball so far in Corvallis? He kicks out the final hour next on The Fan.